Mr. Clarkson, reel 48.
Very much. And when you came out of the Navy, did you find, A, there was a relief, presumably, of getting out?
Oh, ah.
Tell me about what it was like to get away.
I go to... round to die as it possible. I was sent round there, but I'll find out then when I come out that there's no use going to the Labour Exchange, but at the Labour Exchange, there's a union delegate. And I've just joined I joined the NATO union after that. Anyway, I got a job. I was sent up to Dyer's, which was like a big store like Selfridges and alterations and that around there. And there was another joiner there who was the senior hand on the job, and we got on together. He gave me a test job when he found out I'd just left the Navy, and that apparently was all right. He said, I don't mind working alongside of anybody who's just come out of the Navy. I thought perhaps you were one of these 6 weeks trained blokes. I said, well, perhaps I'll know a little bit more about this than you do. Yes, he said, I can see you do. And so we got on all right there. Well, after we'd been there a while, The managing director, he'd a very smarmy, sneery sort of a fellow, actually a fellow who rose from the ranks in this firm. And he stood there one day, and we got a lift well there, and we're panelling that in. But before it was panelled in, it put up plasterboard, it was all round. And we were cutting that away as we filled the woodwork in. And he said something in a very sneer manner, is that what you get your high pay for? And he stood there, he was always picking holes. And this other chap said, hey, bugger off. And he said, who are you talking? He said, I'm talking to you, he said. Get out of it, he said. You're nothing to do with me. And he swore at this fellow, and he frightened him. He swore very violently at him and shoved it. Shut him out of it. Blimey, I said. I looked at him with horror. I thought I could visualise him going over the wall with chains round his feet. I couldn't visualise it. It's been so used to keeping your mouth shut. And he told this fellow off one entry. And then along come the foreman and said, please go out of it, sir, he said. He said, I can't get joiners. He said, and now we've got a couple of good ones here. He said, you're coming interfering. And they said, and they'll shove off. And the boss had to shove off. Blimey, I thought, this is all right. So the next day we're working down on this panel, and by this time they've increased the staff of joiners. They've got about 20 more there. And we're the two oldest hands there. And the manager down on that floor sent up and said, stop them men whistling. And he got quite annoyed because we were working away whistling. Well, sacrilege it was. He was like whistling in church. So we went up to see him and said, hey, who are you talking to? And we choked him off, well and truly. Oh, no, and I felt really butt to think that this could happen. And then came down the managing director, and the job wasn't going fast enough for him. And so the foreman said, well, there you are, he said. They'll have to work overtime. And he said, you've caused this. You stopped them working overtime. He said, they'll have to work overtime to get the job and be done in time. So he said, and you'd better ask them if they will. So he had to come and ask us. And we said, on conditions. And he said, what are the conditions? We said, we want to use your canteen and we want tea sent down if we're working overtime. We want to have a... And what a great change it was. And I began then to open my mouth and say what I wanted, because it had been closed for 22 years. And then I went, having had to join the union, I went down there to a couple of meetings, and I found out there that the majority of the union members were useless blokes who the union had raked in just to get more members. And then when they came along to me and said, we want an extra shilling off you this week, and I said, what's that for? They said, our brothers in Spain. Finished me off altogether. But to be able to say what you felt and know that you weren't going over the wall and getting locked up for it, it was a great thing. And you noticed another thing, that I could never get out of the habit of saying, of CERN, everybody. And that is a habit. And I say, it's anything to please, yes sir, no sir, three bags full. Always frightened of saying the wrong thing. And that is one thing that makes the Navy man so subservient. I can remember a case of poor Jim Mew, a real right seaman he was, when he was drowning at Ross Isle.
Men at Ross
Isle. We were at Ross Isle, and this Jim Mew, this petty officer, he was the coxswain of the picket boat, and there was a storm on up there, and the picket boat, in coming off from Ross Isle, had hit something, and it was in a sinking condition. And as it came alongside, Jim brought it up to the gangway in time for the stoker PO, the stoker, or the stern sheetman and the bowman to get out. They jumped out onto the accommodation ladder, and then down went this boat like a stone it did, and there was Jim left in the water with sea boots, you have real leather they were, oil skins, sou'wester, all the lot complete, and he was getting to, there was about a 10-knot tide runs there, and he was getting swept astern, and they threw a life buoy over from the quarter deck, and there's the commander up there shouting out through a megaphone, "Swim to the buoy, Newland! Swim to the life buoy!" And old Jim stood up there and said, "Aye, aye, sir!" And he stood up in the water and saluted. He went down like a stone. But I thought, well, that is really tradition, isn't it?
But the Navy made you subservient and deferential, and made you, in a way, it put you out of gear with shore life in that sense. It, you found you had to relearn aspects,
yes,
of living ashore.
I should say it's just like an animal that's been locked up for 22 years and it's suddenly released, and it takes it some time in order to get yourself used to the new life.
What difficulties did you have in other ways? I mean, was there anything else you found difficult to get used to come to terms, other than these gains like that? I mean, that you learned that you could have an opinion, and you could state your case, and you could, if necessary, fight back. You know, what other problems did you have about organising your life, say?
What, after?
Being organised, after the Navy.
Well, actually, I thought it was a fine affair. And I found then that when I was working, I was working for a shop fitting firm then, and I was more or less getting praised for the work I'd done. And I'd always used to lodge with the steward of Portsmouth Prison one time, and that was why I had at the back of my mind joining the prison service. And I was working for this firm in Portsmouth, and when I told the foreman that I was leaving, and he said, "Why?" And I told him...
How long were you there, actually? How long did you spend with the firm at Portsmouth before you...
I left the Navy in January, and I left in August then. And he said, "Cool," he said. Well, he kept me there till 9 o'clock that night working, and he said, "Now, look, there's always a job here for you if you get fed up, if you don't want to go in the prison service, or if you fail." And I thought then, well, I don't know, there's appreciation shown for what you do. It's not taken as a matter of course. They appreciate what work you do. And that really, it nearly stopped me from going in the prison service.
Do you, looking back on it now, do you think perhaps the prison service was a kind of escape from shore life back into a kind of system?
So much, except it was very much the same in lots of ways, except that It, in later years, you had a sort of a strong union, if you like, where you, because when I joined, there was a union, the prison officers' union, but it had to be done undercover, because anybody that were found being very active in it, they suddenly got the sack on some grounds or other. But that was very much the same.
Yeah. Did you find, was that, do you think, a reason you went into it, partly? Because it was the same? Because it was more like what you'd been used to? Were you?
Well, no, that's one thing I didn't like about it, was that it was run more or less on army grounds, not navy. Uh-huh. And always having a contempt for the army.
What was the difference? I mean, in what ways was the different, the army from the navy?
Well, you had orderly officers and... you most of the terms were army. It was just well, everybody was treated as if you were in the army.
Yeah. Did you feel more at home in the prison service though than you had been in Civvy Street? Was it more what you've been used to because it had a discipline, a hierarchy, a structure?
It wasn't nice at all.
It wasn't nice.
No, it was an awful place to be when I first joined, and then I tried to get out of it.
You did?
Yes. When I joined 1937, in 1939, we were all trying to get out of it.
Really?
But yes. Chelmsford, because it was the hot bed, it was the worst place for discipline.
Yes.
Oh yes, discipline all right, but you were in fear of your life there all the time.
Of the men?
Yes. We had the toughest in the country. You can imagine, I was 38, 40 in the Navy, and I was the oldest one in the prison, and the junior. And the I always remember the governor there when he interviewed me when I went there from the training class. He said, he was an army man too, he said, "Would like to get the Navy here," he said. "They seem to be versatile in everything," he said. "If the cook goes sick," he said, "and send a Navy man down there, he can cook." He said, "They seem more versatile. Stores, anything," he said. And he was quite right there.
Apart from well, first of all, when a man left the Navy, I mean, what sort of expectation, what sort of hope?
None. Unless he was a tradesman.
Yeah.
Now, say, I was a joiner, and at the time they were screaming out for joiners. And no trouble at all, although some of them were coming out and offering to work for less pay. A lot of them went in the dockyard. They were non-union there, and they paid a lower rate there. But apart from that, there was other people coming out for a seaman. Now, he couldn't expect to get a job. There was a lot of unemployment about at the time. And there they were really badly off. A lot of them, they used to do courses for about 6 weeks or so before they came out. Well, carpentry courses and painting and all sorts. But the people who were outside were getting wise to all that sort of thing. They weren't qualified tradesmen.
Yes, yes. At that time there'd be plenty of other good tradesmen, qualified tradesmen,
yes,
without work.
Oh, no.
Did you miss anything about the Navy when you left it then? I mean, we've talked about the disadvantages and the problem. Did you anything about it you missed about the...
Well, actually, I don't think so. No, I'm sure I didn't. Because, I'll put it this way, that the last 12 months in the Navy, I more or less had a quiet number where it wasn't like being in the Navy at all. Well, I was one of the committee of the... Benevolent Trust.
Yes, right.
And to carry that job out properly, I was given a quiet number where I only went in for a half a day, you might say, every day. Went in at 9 and came out at 12 and very often didn't do anything there, and that was at this senior officer's course where I was like, do the models and that sort of thing. And I had all my meals at home and got paid for that. So
in fact, you were leaving the
sort
Navy...
of broke it.
Yeah, gently.
Broke from one end to the other, right. Yes.
So it wasn't a great loss. You didn't, did you miss the comradeship, the men, the closeness of the life?
No, because there again, I'd lost the comradeship. Yes. I wasn't with any of them. Apart from that, there's no comradeship except in a ship.
Yes.
Not in a barracks or something like that. Because nobody has any time for each other. They're home.
That's right.
Can I? Yeah.
Can I just ask you one more thing before we start?
Yeah.
Benevolent Trust. How did you get put onto that? What was the reason for that? Actually?
The same thing as very often I've gotten to other things through criticising it. And I was at the Vernon then at the torpedo school, and there was a shipwright there, he was the representative, and I used to run it down. I'd run him down for the easy time he was having while he was on it. And he said, why don't you come up to a meeting one day. So I went up there, and the next thing that happened, I was drafted into the barracks. They had a meeting there, I'm on the shipwright lieutenant, he to charge a meeting at all the staff, the shipwrights, the electrical artificers and all that. And my name had been put forward as the representative for Portsmouth. And I found it was a good thing. Mm-hmm. You know, I used to put in a lot of my own time on it, but it was interesting. And on the Benevolent Trust, each of you are also on another committee. Some are on this motor training business they've got. They do a motor course they used to be able to then. And there was also one of the RNBT people on that course, a representative there. Another one on the Inspector of Cruelty to Children on that committee outside. Yeah. I was the governing committee of the maternity affair. Yeah. And that was nice, used to go down there, and the matron used to say, oh, Mr. Clarkson, do you think we might have some new lino in the kitchen, all that? And a lot of them went on the Inspector of Cruelty to Children. You'll find that nearly all of them are ex-RNBT committee. Right. See, I could have had that job. Mm-hmm. And it was a good thing, because you had a bit of a pull. And I used to go to the one meeting, this maternity home committee. The president of the committee was the commodore of the barracks. So there, you had a friend in the barracks, the top man, you see. The president of the whole outfit was Sir John Kelly, the commander-in-chief of Portsmouth. Nobody dared offend him. So he looked after his own kind. His sister, by the way, is still a magistrate there now, I think. But I often wish that I'd gone on that before.
You could have gone on it before, in fact. You could have gone on to it.
I could have done, yes. And while I was on the craters before that, they used to come to me then. The chairman used to send down if there's anybody on the ship wanted any advice, I used to have to interview them and I got the formal recommendation or whatever it was. And every time, it used to go when I was in the barracks, if I went in there every morning, there used to be about five letters there from the secretary, the civilian secretary, asked me if I would interview the following people who'd asked for assistance. So I could just go to the officer of the day and say, RNBT, sir, and I used to shove off and go around and interview these people and then make a recommend for if I thought it was worth it, what they should have, whether it was money, groceries or anything like that. And then twice a week used to sit down at Aggie Weston's in a room there and serve out the money. They used to interview people there. Oh, we used to have a pile of that. Applications about this high, and about three of us used to go through this lot and recommend them all, turn them down, whatever the case may be.